You're listening to the HyberCloud Podcast, where the forecast here is always compelling as we discuss real-life challenges, successes, and stories from the journey to HyberCloud with your host, Andre Tost.
All right, welcome everyone, and thanks for listening to another episode of the HyberCloud Forecast Podcast Series. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming AB Vijay as our guest. Thanks a lot for joining, AB.
Thanks a lot, Andre. Thanks for this opportunity. It's exciting.
So AB is actually, you know, obviously this is the Hybrid Cloud Podcast, and his title is he's an IBM fellow, but he's also the CTO of Hybrid Cloud Management in IBM, and we'll obviously hear more about that. So, but maybe as always, we should start with introductions, AB. If you could just tell us a bit about your background, your history, kind of how you got to be where you are today, and maybe a bit about what you're doing at IBM today.
Just a quick correction there. So I just got into a new role. I'm the CTO for Hybrid Cloud Services now, which includes both Hybrid Cloud Transformation and Management. So anyway, so about me, I'm from Bangalore, India. I've been with IBM for more than 25 years now. IBM is my first job. I did work on various technologies, mostly in the delivery side, delivering client projects in the area of systems programming, application programming, now more and more cloud. I'm an IBM fellow. I have around 60 patents in my name. I'm also a master inventor. Like I said, you know, I just got promoted to be the CTO for Hybrid Cloud Services. So, which is basically all the way from, you know, advising our clients on how to build a hybrid cloud strategy to building the hybrid cloud strategy, helping them move, migrate, modernize their workloads onto cloud, and then, of course, managing those workloads on the cloud.
Excellent. So you mentioned various things that I want to poke at a little more, of course, but maybe we should start out by simply a definition of what hybrid cloud, what you think hybrid cloud is and what its definition is in the context of your job role.
If you look at most of the clients, right, they have already invested quite a lot in their data centers. They already have very stable applications that they have been running through these data centers, right? And when the cloud revolution started, there were initially a lot of resistance in a lot of these enterprises getting onto the cloud journey. So they were still not very clear in terms of what is the security, privacy, what is the total cost of ownership and things like that. But over a period of time, as the cloud matured, what we have started seeing is all these large enterprises have started embracing cloud. And it was, I mean, initially some clients really looked at, hey, can I just close my data center, move 100% on cloud? But most of the clients realized that a hybrid strategy would be much better rather than moving everything onto the cloud, mainly because of the compliance reasons, security reasons, or, you know, the stability reasons. Could also be because of the comfort that they had with this system. So more and more the clients, what they're doing, as they are moving towards the cloud, they want to retain some applications on-prem, some applications are on the cloud, public cloud, some of them are on private cloud. So what we really mean from the hybrid cloud standpoint is basically covering all of these various types of workloads, right? And our focus is to provide the consulting services, right, as IBM for all of these workloads.
Okay. And this is pretty common, I think, in terms of the definitions that I hear from my guests, is that it's a very broad definition of hybrid cloud as with respect to location, being very flexible with respect to location, but also the types of applications that it goes about. So coming back to your job title, you said there's hybrid cloud management, but there's also hybrid cloud transformation. So I'd like to dig a little into both of these. When we talk about transformation, what does that actually mean? So if I am an enterprise and I'm running my own IT in my own data center in whatever way, and then now IBM approaches me and says, we can help you get to the hybrid cloud. What does that mean in concrete terms? And maybe you can have some examples of what that entails.
The way we are organized in IBM, like I said, in hybrid cloud services, under hybrid cloud services, We have hybrid cloud transformation and hybrid cloud manage. Most of our clients that we work with from the transformation standpoint, it all starts with having a conversation in terms of how can I help my client move their workloads to cloud, right? And what kind of cloud strategy should I be using? Should it be a private cloud? Should it be on a public cloud, right? Or should it be an edge, for example, right? And it requires a lot of thinking, lot of conversations that we have with the clients. And that is what we do as part of hybrid cloud advice, right? So when we say advice, what we are really trying to do is we are discovering what applications do they have, what technologies are they using, and what is the overall roadmap for moving these workloads onto the cloud. And when we do that, the obvious focus is on their non-functional requirements, such as, you know, what is their current security, what is their current privacy, compliance, and things like that, performance, of course. And more importantly, what is the cost that they are spending right now, and how cloud can help them reduce the overall total cost of ownership. So all this strategy work comes under hybrid cloud transformation advice. Once we advise our clients, typically we come up with a roadmap which might say, hey, these are the workloads that can move on to the cloud. These are the workloads that cannot move as it is onto the cloud. It might need a little bit of refactoring. These are the type of workloads which does not make sense for you to move to the cloud. Maybe you keep it on-prem or completely rewrite them, right? So there are various types of measures that we use to identify which kind of workloads follow what kind of a journey, right? And that is what comes out of the roadmap. And from the roadmap, you can either follow two major paths, right? One is move, right? Or migrate or modernize, or the second path is build a fresh application, right? So that comes under build and move as part of the hybrid cloud transformation. Now, it is not just enough for us to move the help our clients to move their workloads or build the workloads on cloud. It's also important to manage them, right? What we call the day two. And the manage is very, very important, though and that comes under hybrid cloud management. When we are building or when we are moving these applications onto the cloud, we focus on how manageable these applications are going to be. And that's where we bring in our practices of site reliability engineering, right? Bringing in a lot of automation, observability, so that when the applications move on to the cloud, the manage piece is not an afterthought, right? Where as much as possible, the management is done in a self-healing way with automation and AI ops, right? So all of those topics would come under hybrid cloud management. Am I making sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Coming back to the you said the assessment of the applications and which applications to move, is there like a typical mix that you see? So it starts out with what I always call this lift and shift, right? I take an app, I don't touch it. I'm just running it in a different place so that I don't have to worry about, say, the infrastructure anymore, right? Somebody is running the servers for me and I don't need to worry about that, but the software layer remains intact, versus truly modernizing, refactoring, whatever you might want to call it, which entails, you know, touching the application, right? Making changes to it, making it better, so to speak, or more suited for the kind of cloud environment that are running in it. What kind of mix do you see in terms of maybe even percentage of how much do you see a lift and shift versus true modernization of applications?
It actually depends on the type of technology that we talk about, right? So the recent client I'm working on, they have huge SAP workload, right? And around 800 plus applications is what they have. And most of them are SAP and most of them are already running in a VM. So it is very naturally easy for me to lift and shift such VMs. And the client actually has a plan to shut down their data centers and move 100% onto the cloud. And we are moving it to AWS cloud in this case. So the strategy is more in terms of first, we build the landing zones on the target cloud. The landing zone will have all your security policies and how are you going to do observability? How are you going to do overall FinOps, for example, and things like that, right? So we kind of build that boilerplate or the landing zone. And then once that is done, we are looking at moving all of these workloads onto the cloud and watching, you know, how they perform before we think of any modernization or migration, right? So it depends on the client. And on the other hand, you have clients who want to modernize before they move, right? Some of their workloads, right? So it really depends upon, it all boils down to how matured the application is written, right? And sometimes you end up with a lot of performance issues and a lot of cost if you just lift and shift blindly. So you'll have to do an assessment because you would have built a monolith. One good thing about data center is you don't pay as you go. But when you go on cloud, you are paying for every CPU cycle, every RAM that you are using and things like that, right? Now, the biggest issue is if you take a monolith as it is and move it to cloud, you might be spending more money on cloud than keeping it in data center. So for such applications, it's important to understand even before. That's what we do in advice in terms of, you know, as part of advice, we go through the application portfolio. What type of application is this? What is the technology stack that you have? And help our clients decide in terms of whether you have to modernize before you move or you have to, you know, migrate, lift and shift as it is, or make slight tweaks before you move. So the percentage is very difficult because it depends. But typically, if you look at the modern ways of doing things, I mean, if it is a modern technology, already the current applications are all built on modern technology, we migrate a lot. While if it is a legacy technology, we modernize a lot.
And when you say legacy, does that include even things like programming language, platform it runs on? I guess one of the questions I would have for you is, how much do you see hardware architectures playing a role in there? You know, things that run maybe on a mainframe today and moving those and what it means to, quote, refactor those?
Yeah, that's a very good point, right? See, there are multiple layers to this, right? Obviously, it starts with the hardware infrastructure. So what is your current? There are some workloads that you cannot run on cloud. These are very old legacy applications that you have. And typically, and the client might decide because it's a very, very, like banking, for example, right? So a lot of banks I work with, what they say is, hey, my core banking system is running on mainframe and AS400 kind of applications. I don't want to touch it. Okay. But I want to build a layer on top of it, which allows me to build modern applications on cloud. So the AI part of it, or the mobile front end, or the web front ends, all that can be on cloud. But I want the core banking system to be here where all the transactions are coming. So there are architectures like that we propose. To answer your question, it basically starts with the infrastructure. You know, is this an operating system or a middleware that you have that I can migrate as it is? If it is, like I said, if it is already virtualized in some form, like on a VMware or something, it's a very good candidate for us to move faster. You don't have to modernize a lot. But if it is not virtualized, if it is a legacy programming language, if it is a legacy architecture, like, you know, you have built it on systems, but, you know, it doesn't support Intel architecture, for example, right? It is very difficult for us to lift and shift. You'll have to modernize. Programming languages, yeah, you're right. I mean, all the legacy programming languages, we modernize a lot. Like COBOL, for example, you might want to modernize if you really want to move to cloud. Otherwise, the real benefit of running applications on cloud comes when you use a microservices kind of a mindset rather than a monolith kind of a mindset, because you need to scale up and scale down at a functional level, not at an application level. Only then, you know, you have all the control in terms of, you know, okay, during Christmas, these are the functionalities that are predominantly used. I want to scale up only those functionality rather than the ones. Otherwise, you'll end up, scaling up the whole application and it ends up eating more and more CPU and all the resources, and you end up paying more and more, right? So again, the architecture is another thing that will help you decide whether you want to move or modernize.
How do you deal with the fact that, and I've come across various examples of this where clients of ours were saying, we would like to bring some of the applications onto the cloud in an isolated kind of fashion, but there's very few applications that are actually isolated. You know, everything kind of depends on, say, an existing way of obtaining system of record data, for example, using some MQ connection to a core banking system, like you mentioned, as an example, on a mainframe, right? And so that it turns out in a spider web of dependencies between all applications, and to then say, how can I just grab a few of those and pull them out without breaking all the dependencies that they have on the existing systems?
APIfication is one of the primary things that we start off with in such scenarios. For this bank that I'm working on, they have this core banking system, but which they don't want to touch for very good reasons, because of compliance, because of, you know, the whole bank runs on it, right? So what we really started doing is going for an API, and more importantly, event-driven approach towards that, because we don't want to have too much of, because we know this has to scale up, right? So this whole applications that we built on top of core banking system should scale. And we are talking of millions of users who will be using their mobile phones or their web applications to ask about, let's say, to do transfers of money or to buy something online or things like that, right? In such cases, what we really do is we look at an event-driven approach and an API layer, which kind of exposes the core banking or core functionality and build our cloud applications on top of it. That way, you know, it is a very scalable architecture. And once we do that, you're kind of hiding the legacy system. And there could be some of those legacy components which we slowly modernize over a period of time, which doesn't affect the consumers because they are still accessing through the API. We do this blue-green deployments, canary deployments, so that they don't even know that we modernize the backend applications. So these are some approaches that we use, and there are various, like you said, you know, MQ-based or Kafka-based applications that we expose through that, right?
Do you see certain industries, or do you see different behaviors in different industries? Obviously, we use banking a lot as an example. Banks are obviously very IT-heavy, IT-centric, yeah. But you see other industries doing all the same things, or does it depend?
Each industry, they have their own. See, it all goes down to point number one is, what is your compliance, security, privacy policies, right? Point number two is, how risk-averse are you, right? Point number three is, what is your TCO right now? Will cloud improve your TCO? So these are, it's not really the functional things that really matter. It is all these non-functional aspects which help you decide which industry is doing better than other, right? If you take retail, for example, right? There are a lot of born on cloud on retail that you will see, right? And it's very easy for them and it is very intuitive for them to go on to the cloud-based models rather than the banks they are willing to go, but you know, they still have this, you know, they can't go 100% onto the cloud. But having said that, when I said cloud, again, I don't mean public cloud here, right? So it's based on they cannot modernize everything that is there because the core banking systems, like manufacturing systems, for example, they are all built on legacy platforms and they cannot throw away those supply chain systems, for example, right? So you can't just throw away that and build a new Kubernetes-based, microservices-based architectures out of it, right? So they're all going to be monoliths. You have to live with those monoliths. Then you look at your TCO. Is it making sense for me to move this onto a cloud? You know, what is the cost of running that monolith on cloud versus keeping it in data center and things like that? So those are all the decisions that we take. So again, you will find different types. Even in banking, there are banks who are embracing cloud native mindset, right? A microservices mindset more and more now, right? And of course, they are a little slow compared to retail, for example, who embraced it much faster.
And you said, and by the way, I assume when you say public cloud, we're you know, you're pretty agnostic as far as which cloud that is, right? So it could be all of the usual candidates, right? It could be IBM's, of course, but it could all be Amazon or Google or Azure and so forth, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that it could also be edge. Can you give an example of what is running on the edge today?
If you look at edge, is becoming more and more prominent now because you have manufacturing plants, you have shops, right, where you have computers now. So we are looking at real-time insights, real-time analytics. Now, if you have all your applications on a public cloud and you have to transfer all the data all the way to the cloud to do analytics, for example, real-time analytics or streaming analytics, one, you are spending a lot of money on egress, ingress, and all that. Two, there is a point of failure, one single point of failure where, you know, there might be delays in the network and things like that. So what we are moving more and more towards is a distributed architecture with edge, where now the edge architectures have become very matured. Now we are able to run, I would say, micro clouds or whatever is the right word for that, right? Like you can have a micro version of Kubernetes, for example, running on a Raspberry Pi kind of a microcontroller. Now, the advantage of doing that is I can actually do most of the data filtering to a certain extent AI and control the sensors, give real-time insights as much as possible at the edge and move some of the workloads to the edge and only send summary data or, you know, the consolidation of what has happened to the main cloud. That way, I'm saving a lot on egress, ingress. I'm saving a lot on my the CPU cycle utilizations on cloud. I'm getting real-time analytics. That's one use case. And there are a lot of use cases. And you will find that a lot in manufacturing systems because when you are doing, like, for example, work in progress tracking of a car, there's a lot of logic that you need to do then and there, very close to the PLCs, very close to the conveyor belt, which is carrying your chassis. You can't be streaming all that. And there's just crazy amount of data that goes through all the IoT sensors that you have. And correlating, you know, what's happening between these IoT and data coming across multiple sensors at server side or at the cloud side and alerting might delay, right? And in which case you might lose something, right? So those are all very good use cases where we are doing it in delivery. Now, when I say delivery, I meant the logistics. So all the logistics company are embracing edge kind of a model. Manufacturing, like I said, right? Even banks, retail banks are looking at, hey, can I use edge-based analytics rather than do every time go on to the server side and things like that, right? So
that seems to be something I'm hearing a lot is just like you said, there is more and more data now, and there is more and more that companies want to do with the data and apply, you know, analytics and just plain intelligence to that data. At the same time, that is countered by moving data is the most expensive thing you can do in this space of cloud computing in general, right? So there seems to be this desire to leave the data where it is and do most of the processing as close to the data, the source of the data as possible, right? Simply for efficiency and cost reasons.
We are moving the process instead of data, right? So, and the maturity of the cloud, if you look at the cloud software that you have, like Kubernetes, all these, they allow you to do this in a very efficient and optimized way. So that is also allowing you to do this, right? Your overall DevSecOps, you're having a single control plane based model with something like Kubernetes based architecture, right? Allows you to deploy the workloads closer to the data rather than, you know, get the data to the process.
But that is, it's a good point. I was gonna mention that is, you know, it is a bit of a culture change in terms of how you built your applications, how you maintain your applications, how you manage them. You mentioned management earlier, right? So let's say management includes things like logging and tracing and security, obviously being a big deal. Often the cloud comes with its own stack of tools and processes and ways and in which you run these, in which you do these, you know, in which you define. Every cloud has its own way of defining security policies, for example, that control access to certain things. I would assume that that's where the bulk of the work lies, right? Just like you said, not necessarily changing what the application does, but changing how you keep it alive, so to speak.
And the best part is, of course, you know, it's very important to build applications which are manageable. But the best part of these cloud stack architectures is everything is code, right? So your infrastructure is code, your policy is code now, right? And then your overall pipelines that you do on how you want to build and where you want to deploy is code. And of course, your application is also code. And your data pipelines is also code, right? So the best part of that is, you know, it's become very easy for us to inject policies onto the applications. Application programmers focus mainly on the application logic. They don't worry about, hey, how do I do security or policy or things like that? So it gets injected into the code depending upon where you are deploying and how you are deploying the code. So that is a beautiful thing because that, again, you know, helps you in terms of having a very systematic way of deploying applications and managing, more importantly, like you said, managing the applications, right? If your observability is zero, there is no way you can manage the applications because it's not like a data center where you know where the computer is and you sit in front of the computer, log in into the computer, you know what processes you are running there. Here, you know, you're distributing the workloads in a hybrid cloud scenario. You might have workloads on edge, you might have it on-prem, you might have it in a private cloud, or some of the workloads might be on a public cloud. And sometimes some clients have some workloads on Google, some workloads on AWS, right? So it gets very messy because of this distributed nature. And more you embrace microservices, you're going more and more distributed. So from day one, that's what we say. I mean, we call this day zero, where you design and architect. Day one is where you build. Day two is where you manage. So the philosophy is on day zero, you think about day two. So how are you going to build these applications manageably? What will be your GitOps pipe? How will you code your policies? How will you code your security? What is the overall observability and AI ops engine that I'm going to run on top of it? So that on day one, you code these as part of your infrastructure code, so that when an application developer comes and deploys through your infrastructure code, all of these things kind of come together.
How do you, at the end of all this, how do you measure success? So obviously, cost is one, but just also like you mentioned, sometimes that backfires because there's this blind assumption that if I'm going to the cloud, I'm going to save money, which is not always true, right? So what other factors are there to measure the benefits of a transformation like the ones that you've been describing?
I think the key measure, obviously, the cost, keeping cost aside, right? So cost is very key, the TCO rather than just cost, right? The business agility is another very, very important factor. And that's one of the motivation factors for a lot of our clients to move to cloud, because they want to quickly roll out applications or change in the logic in the applications, and they want to scale very, very quickly, right? So if they want to start scale up in terms of number of users or new geos they want to roll out, so they want to do that. So that is, it is business agility and scalability, I would say, right, is very, very important factor that is helping decide the success or failure of a cloud implementation. And third very important thing is in terms of the manageability, right? So when I say there is a cost aspect to the manageability, but then there is also a qualitative thing on top of it, right? In terms of how manageable is your portfolio of applications. In general, I have seen it's much easier for you to manage applications on cloud if you have done the right things versus having applications running on data center, right? What it helps you do is you can constantly look at which are the applications I'm really using. There are tools like Turbonomic, for example, right? Which helps you say, okay, what is your overall application resource management and optimizations that you can bring in? So there is an opportunity for you to continuously modernize and optimize your portfolio, which is not happening because here in data centers and in traditional way, you just have those applications running. You don't know who is using what applications and things like that. But the visibility of these applications usage, the resources that it uses, is very, very matured on a cloud rather than on-prem, I would say. So what it allows you to do is, it also, I mean, indirectly impacts your TCO end of the day, because you don't have any junk applications that are still running. But more importantly, your portfolio is much more clean and you know where you're spending your money and how you can prioritize those applications and based on the business priorities that are changing.
Now, unfortunately, I'm looking at the ticking clock here. We've almost run out of time, but I don't want to let you go before asking the kind of the final question, which I always ask at the end of each of these episodes. And that is, if you can give us an example of something that you're working on right now that really excites you, something really cool that makes you want to get to work in the morning, so to speak, any kind of project that you could share with us?
Officially and unofficially, both of them, I'll tell you. Okay. So officially, so right now, I just took up this role, like I said, in the beginning, right? So I'm trying to understand the scope of this work. It's apparently much broader than what I was doing till last year. I'm given this challenge in terms of how we can optimize the way. So first of all, we need to integrate the whole storyline from advise, build, the move, all the way to manage. And the day two thinking on day zero is the other thing, right? So accordingly, what I'm working on is in terms of, so we have this platform that we had already announced called ICCA. I think it's called IBM Consulting Cloud Accelerator, right? So that is what I am looking at in terms of being the one platform which will bring all these faces together in a way of journey. And it is, the work has already started when I took up the role, and my job is to now take it to the next level in terms of, you know, how we have this day two thinking and day zero, so that when you go through the journey, you are ensuring that you're bringing day two aspects into it, right? And then, of course, you know, I'm working with a couple of clients where we are talking of large migrations and modernization, all the good stuff in terms of, you know, coming up with the strategy for them. There are clients which I'm working on where things are not working well for them. So I'm sitting with them. Their TCO is way too high. So how can we optimize that, right? So that is the other thing that I'm doing. On the personal front, I do a lot of Raspberry Pi programming and all that, right? So I am now set up the Raspberry Pi cluster, Kubernetes cluster. I do a lot of blogs because of all the work that I do in office. I kind of purify myself by writing a lot of code. Right. So I don't want to lose the coding practice. So if you look at most of the blogs that I write is more in the coding space, where I'm building the whole book library application and putting it on AWS, walking through how to use it.
Very interesting. And I mean, if people could see me, they would see me smiling, because there was a time when I played a lot with Raspberry Pis. I have a whole bunch of them at home. I've kind of drop that. And every now and then I think I should pick it up again, because it's so much fun to work with, especially. So I've never tried to run a Kubernetes cluster on Raspberry Pis. And so maybe I should, you know, you should share your blog link.
Sure.
We could maybe even put that in the description for this podcast, right?
So yeah, sure.
We'll go check it out. All right. Very cool. Thank you so much for joining us today, AB. That was some great insight. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for this opportunity. I enjoyed talking to you.
All right. Well, and with that, we'll wrap up today's episode. I want to thank everyone for listening and hope to see you all again soon. Bye-bye.